the name. Jacob was about to start up at mention of the evil names which Gad had applied to Joseph, and which the old man was at once ready to regard as a culpable disrespect to his holiest feelings. But Joseph had such a charming way and plausible tongue, he knew so well how to speak with sudden vivacity, to pacify and pass on, that Jacob's anger died down before it had mounted, and he could do nothing but gaze with a rapt smile into the speaker's black and somewhat slanting eyes, narrowed by guile, unspeakably sweet. "It was nothing," he heard his son say, in the thin, sharp voice which he loved, because it had much of Rachel's quality in it. "I spoke to him like a brother for his rudeness, and he took the reproof with mildness, so it shall be counted to him as a virtue that we parted kindly. I went to the top of the hill to look down upon the town and Ephron's double house. I purified myself here with washing and prayer. As for the lion with which my father thought to frighten me, the ravager of the lower world, the breed of the black moon, he came not out of the thicket of the Jardin." He pronounced the words with other vowels than ours, forming the R on the palate, indeed, but not rolling it, and giving the E an open sound, "but found his evening meal in the gullies and the cliffs, and the eyes of thy child have not seen him neither near nor far off." He called himself Child, because he knew that the reminder of his babyhood was especially moving to the father. He went on, "But if he had come, with lashing tail, and roared after his prey like the voice of the chanting seraphim, yet thy child would have been little affrighted, or not at all, before his rage, for of a certainty he had sought again the lambs, robber that he is, if Almodad had not driven him off with fire and clattering, and would wisely have avoided the child of man. For knoweth not my father that the beasts fear and avoid man? For that God gave him the spirit of understanding, and taught him the orders into which the single things fall. Doth he not know how Shemuel shrieked when the man of earth knew how to name the creation as though he were its master and framer, and how all the fiery servants of the Lord were amazed and cast down their eyes, because they may know how to cry, 'Holy, holy, holy,' in part choruses, but have absolutely no understanding of upper and lower orders? And the beasts, too, they are ashamed, and put the tail between their legs, because we know them, and have power over their names, and can thus render powerless the roaring might of the single one by naming him. If now he had come, with long slinking tread, with his hateful nose, mewing and spitting, terror would not have robbed me of my senses, nor made me pale before his riddle. 'Is thy name Bloodthirst?' I would have asked of him, making merry at his expense. 'Or Springing Murder?' But then I would have sat upright and cried out, 'Lion! Lo, lion art thou, by nature and species, and thy riddle lieth bare before me, so that I speak it out, and with a laugh it is plain.' And he would have blinked before the name, and gone meekly away before the word, powerless to answer unto me. For he is quite unlearned, and knows naught of writing tools." He went on punning, which he loved at all times to do, but did so now, as with the previous boasting, in order to divert his father. It was a constant gratification to him that the word safer, book, also writing tools, played upon his own name, for in contrast to all his brothers, not one of whom could write, he loved occupation with the stylus, and displayed so much skill that he might have served as scribal apprentice at one of the places where documents were kept, Kirjath Sefer, or Gebel, if Jacob could conceivably have consented to such a career. "If," he went on, "the father would come here and sit down in ease and comfort beside the son at the well, for instance, here upon its rim, while the book-learned child slipped down to sit at his feet, it would be well and charmingly done. For then he would entertain his master and lord, telling him a little fable of names and naming, which he has learnt and knows how to recite with good effect. For it was at the time of the generations of the flood that the angel Senhazai saw upon the earth a damsel named Ishkara, and was enamored of her beauty, so that he said, "Hear me." But she answered and said, "There will be no thought of hearing thee, unless thou first teach me the true and unfeigned name of God, by the might of which thou springst up in pronouncing it." Then the messenger, Senhazai, in his folly, taught her the true name, and out of his burning desire that she should hearken unto him. But hardly did Ishkara see herself in the possession of it, what thinkst my father that she did, but out of a clear sky, snap her fingers in the face of the importunate messenger. This is the climax of the story. But, alas, I see that the father hearkeneth not, but that his ears are sealed up by his thoughts, and he is in deep musing. And truly Jacob was not listening, but mused. It was a vastly expressive musing, in the truest sense of the word. It was the highest degree of emotionally absorbed absence of mind, for less he did not do. When he mused, it had to be a proper musing, recognizable at 100 paces, so that not alone it was evident to everybody that Jacob was plunged in a muse, but everybody then first found out what a proper musing really was, and was seized with awe at state and picture, the old man leaning on his staff, which he grasped with both hands, the head bowed over the arm, the deep, dreamy bitterness of the lips in the silver beard, the old brown eyes boring and burrowing into the depths of memory and thought, eyes whose gaze was cast up so much from below that it almost got caught in the overhanging brows. Men of feeling are expressive, for expression comes from the need of bringing to proof the feelings that well up, unsilenced and unrestrained. It springs from a lofty and sensitive nature, in which shyness and austerity, high-mindedness and sensuality, straightforwardness and pose all appear on the stage in one single dignified role, producing in the beholder a sense of respect, together with a slight inclination to smile. Jacob was very expressive. To Joseph's great joy, for he loved his father's high-pitched emotional key and took pride in it. But it troubled and agitated others who had daily business with him, and in particular his other sons, who in every disagreement between him and them feared nothing so much as just his power of expression. Thus Reuben, when, after the wretched affair with Bilhah, he had to confront his father. Fear and awe before the high-flung phrase were deeper and darker then than they are now. But under such a visitation, then as now, the ordinary man would feel like expressing his superstitious avoidance in some such words as our "God forbid." But Jacob's power of expression, the vibration in his voice, the elevation of his language, the solemnity of his nature in general, were linked with a disposition and tendency which was likewise the reason why one so often saw him powerfully and picturesquely musing. He so inclined to association of thought that it characterized and controlled his whole inner life, and in such thoughts his whole nature almost literally exhausted itself. Wherever he went, his soul was played upon by chords and correspondences, diverted and led away into far-reaching considerations which mingled past and to come in the present moment, and made his gaze blurred and broken as in deep introspection. It was almost painful, but by no means peculiar to him alone, for many people suffer from it in varying degrees. It might almost be said that in Jacob's world, intellectual value and significance, the words taken in their most actual sense, depending upon the copious flow of mythical associations of ideas and their power to permeate the moment. But why had it sounded so strange, so strained and charged with meaning, when the old man in his broken sentence had given voice to his fear that Joseph might fall into the well? Because Jacob could not think of those depths without connecting them in his thought to their enrichment and consecration with the idea of the lower world and the kingdom of the dead. That idea which played an important part, not indeed in his religious convictions, but probably in the depths of his soul, and in the power of his imagination. that primitive, mythical inheritance of all peoples, the conception of the underworld, the realm of Osiris, the dismembered one, where he ruled, the place of Namtar, the god of plagues, the kingdom of terrors, whence came all evil spirits and pestilences. It was the world wherein too the constellations descended at their setting, to rise again at the appointed hour, whereas no mortal who trod the path to this abode ever found the way back again. It was the place of filth and excrement, but also of gold and riches, the womb in which one buried the seed corn, out of which it sprouted again as nourishing grain, the land of the black moon, of winter and the parching summer, whither Tammuz, the shepherd, in his spring sank down and would sink each year when the boar killed him, and all creation ceased, and the weeping world lay sere, until Ishtar, goddess and mother, made pilgrimage to hell to seek him, broke the dust-covered bolts of his prison, and mid laughter and rejoicing brought forth the beautiful and beloved out of the pit and the grave to reign over the new season and the fresh-flowering fields. Why then should Jacob's voice not shake with emotion and his question wake strange, significant echoes? Since to him, not with his mind but with his feeling, the mouth of the well was an entrance to the lower world, so that the mere word called up all this and yet more within him. A man of dull and untrained sense, void of imagination, could utter it and have only the most immediate and practical reaction. As for Jacob, it imparted dignity and solemn spirituality to his whole being, made it expressive to the point of painfulness. The effect upon the erring Reuben when Jacob hurled at him the opprobrious name of Ham is impossible to measure, for Jacob was not the man to use such an epithet in the sense of a mere pale allusion. His spirit had frightful power to dissolve the present into the past, to bring back into force the consummated event, and his, Jacob's, personal identity with Noah, the father who was spied upon, reviled, and dishonored at the hand of his son. And Reuben, too, knew beforehand that it would be so, and that he would quite literally lie as Ham before Noah. That was why his flesh had crept when he went in. The old man's present mood of deep and manifest musing was due to memories called up by his son's prattle about names and naming. Remote and anxious memories that weighed on his spirit like a dream of the old days, when in actual bodily fear he had awaited the meeting with the brother from the plains, whom he had cheated, and who was doubtless still thirsting for revenge, and then, aspiring so fervently after the power of the spirit, had wrestled for the sake of the name with the strange man who had fallen upon him. A frightful, heavy, highly sensual dream, yet with a certain wild sweetness. No light and fleeting vision that passes and is gone, but a dream of such physical warmth, so dense with actuality, that it left a double legacy of life behind it as the tide leaves the fruits of the sea on the strand at the ebb. The breaking of Jacob's hip, the hollow of the thigh from which he halted ever since the unknown had put it out of joint in wrestling. And then the name. But not the stranger's name, for that had been denied up to the last, until the dawn, until it was almost too late. However, Jacob demanded it of him, hot and panting and with resistless strength. Not the stranger's name, but Jacob's own other and second name, the surname which the strange man left him in the struggle, that he might let him go before the sun rose and save him from the painful danger of being late. The title of honor, which since that time had been bestowed upon Jacob when one would flatter him and make him smile. Israel. God doeth battle. Again he saw the ford of Jabbok before him, where he had remained alone in the shrubbery, having sent on ahead his sons and his women, and the flocks and herds, which he had set apart as a present for his brother Esau, to find favor in his eyes. Saw the unquiet and cloudy night, when he, unquiet as the sky, had roved about between two efforts after slumber, still shaken from the encounter with Rachel's father, which, by God's help, had gone off well, and the father been successfully overreached, but already in torment before the approach of yet another whom he had defrauded and betrayed. How he had exhorted the Elohim in prayer, and fairly conjured him to stand by him. He saw the man, too, with whom so unwittingly he had been involved in a life-and-death struggle, for the moon had suddenly glared out of the cloud, and he has seen him breast to breast, the wide-apart, unwinking ox-eyes, the face and shoulders glistening like polished stone, and in his heart he felt again the fury of desire with which in agonized whispers he had demanded the name. How strong he had been! With the desperate strength of a dream, and enduring with unsuspected reserves of power in the depth of his soul, he had held out all night, until the dawn, until he had seen that the man would be too late, and the latter had prayed him, "Let me go." Neither had prevailed over the other, but did not that mean the victory was Jacob's, he being no extraordinary man, but a man from hereabouts, and of the seed of mankind? Yet it seemed as though the wide-eyed one had doubted that. The painful thrust and grip upon the thigh had seemed like an examination. Perhaps it was meant to find out whether there was a socket there, whether it was movable, and not, like the strange man's own, fixed and not adapted to sitting down. And then the man had known how to turn the thing, so that he did not utter his own name, but gave Jacob another in place of it. He could hear in his musing, as clearly as then with his mortal ears, the man's high and brazen voice speaking to him, "Thy name shall henceforth be called Israel." Whereupon he had loosened his arms and let the owner of the strange voice go, so that there was still some hope he might arrive in time. The Monkey Land of Egypt. The stately old man's way of coming out of his reverie was no less expressive than his absorption in it. With a deep sigh, with weighty dignity, he straightened up and shook it from him, and with lifted head looked about him widely in space as one who wakes, plainly collecting himself and finding his way back to the present. He seemed not to have heard Joseph's suggestion that he sit down at his side. The lad realized, to his embarrassment, that this was no moment for historiettes, however pleasing. The old man had still things to say of serious import. The lion had not been his sole concern, for Joseph had given cause for others, and his father spared him nothing. He heard, "There is a country far to the south, the land of Hagar the maid, called Ham's country, or the black, the monkey land of Egypt. For its people are black of soul, though red of face. They come old out of the womb. Their nurslings are like little old men, and in their cradles lisp of death. I have heard that they carried the manhood of their god, 3 ells long, through their streets, with playing of lutes and trumpets, and cohabit with painted corpses in the graves. They are all swollen with conceit, lustful and melancholy. They clothe themselves after the curse that lighted on Ham, who was to go naked with his shame exposed, for their garments are linen thin as spider-web, which covers their nakedness without hiding it. And on this they pride themselves, saying that they wear woven air, for they have no shame of their flesh, and neither word nor understanding for that which is sin. The bellies of their dead they stop with spices, and on the place of the heart they lay, as is most fit, the image of a dung-beetle. They are rich and lustful, like the folk of Sodom and Gomorrah. It pleasureth them to make their beds together, and to exchange their wives one with another. And when a woman goeth in the street, and seeth a young man after whom she lusteth, so lieth she with him. They are like beasts, and they bow down to beasts in the innermost of their ancient temples. And I have heard that a virgin, and whom no man had known until that time, let herself be covered before all the people in the temple by a ram named Banabdedu, doth my son approve these ways?